I was really unhappy. I started researching, you can actually choose to be happy. I truly believe that it is the responsibility of the leader to prioritize their own happiness and well-being and create a positive culture in their organization.
Hey everyone, Dave Menz, Laundromat Millionaire, coming to you again today from Cincinnati, Ohio with my beautiful, intelligent wife, Carla. And we all know that she makes the show, not really me. So we're going to jump right in, and we have a really cool guest today. I know a lot of times on this show, we talk to laundromat owners and even small business owners, and we're talking to another one today, but we're also talking to a published author. And we're going to talk about her book and how it's going to influence us as leaders and small business owners, not just in the laundromat world, but in the small business world in general, how we can be better leaders, we can be happier leaders, and also how we can have a happier team that enjoy coming to work and get fulfillment out of doing what they do for a living. So anyway, we're going to jump into it today, but I cannot wait for this episode. Do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, I am very excited for our guest today. I think we all need this conversation. So today's guest is Tia Graham. She is coming to us from British Columbia, Canada, where she now lives with her husband and two daughters. Tia is the founder of Arrive at Happy and also the author of Be a Happy Leader, Stop Feeling Overwhelmed, Thrive Personally, and Achieve Killer Business Results. Through her organization, she pursues her mission of inspiring transformation through the science of happiness and neuroscience. Tia has worked with global companies such as Four Seasons, Hilton Hotels, and the American Heart Association, among many others. And we're just excited to have her on the show today. So Tia, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be with both of you.
So I'm curious, Tia, when in your social circle, in your personal life, are you like known as the happy one?
Yes, I will say my husband, and maybe not every day.
Well, yeah. We're not going to ask him. It's okay. We won't go behind
the social circle. But yes, I will say throughout my life, and one of the reasons why I started this company is throughout my life, many people, whether it were hotel owners or my sales team, friends, family, I've been asked consistently, how do you stay so happy? Where do you get this positive energy from? And I've had good years and bad years, good, you know, ups and downs like every other human being.
Sure.
But I've always made decisions and designed my life to be happy.
So nice. Do you feel like you're just naturally happy, or do you feel like you've just always had strategies for how to cope with things, or, you know, pull out the bright side? Like, where does this come from? Is it natural?
Such a good question.
Created?
Yes. So our personalities, yours, mine, it's similar to our physical, you know, our genetic history contributes, right? So I have dark hair and blue eyes because of my genetic history. So I am definitely predisposed to be a little bit happier. My dad is a very happy-go-lucky guy. And the research shows that, you know, about 50%, and it's an average, comes from our genetics. So I think it is a little bit genetic, absolutely. And I have had, you know, a loving upbringing. Again, there's challenges and ups and downs, but I think life circumstances also helped. But to answer the third part is, a lot of it comes from my choice to prioritize this and the decisions I make every single day, every single month on how I live my life. And as I've been researching the science of happiness and neuroscience, I've realized that a lot of the decisions directly impact happiness. So it's a combination, but I work at it a lot also.
So 50% genetic, 50% choice is a rough idea.
And this is average. This isn't, you know, think about average. So it's around 50% genetics, 10% life circumstances. So I say, if you're a farmer in China, or you're a lawyer in the middle of New York City, right? Our life circumstances play a part, but about 40% is our choices. And it's not, and all of them affect each other, of course. And people can think about, but the good thing is that a lot of it is within our control. It's not just genetics, or it's not just your life circumstances.
Right, right. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know for sure.
Before we completely dive into what we can do, just quickly, how did you get into this?
So I first thought about it probably about a decade ago when I had years of people asking me, how do you stay so happy? So I was thinking, okay, I know I can help other people. You know, on the spectrum, I'm higher on this happiness spectrum. I know I can help other people. The catalyst to my background is in sales and marketing in luxury hotels. So for 15 years, I was the director of sales and marketing for hotels in the US and also in Europe. And when I went back to work, I was the director of sales at a hotel in Los Angeles. I went back to work after having my second daughter. I had a two-year-old and a brand new baby, trying to juggle executive career, marriage, you know, exhausted from young kids and everything else, my own health and wellness. And I was really unhappy during that point. And what scared me was I had the thoughts of, oh, maybe this is my new normal. Maybe I'm not going to be that happy person anymore. Maybe I'm this, which was a terrifying thought for someone that's, you know, made happiness very, very important in her life. And so at that point is when I started researching. I started researching what makes people happy, how does the brain work, what makes people happy at work, et cetera. And that that was the catalyst to actually create a company around this.
Well, I have totally been in your shoes. We have boys that are 2 years apart. And I remember having that second one and, you know, so reliant on you, and you felt like you just weren't you anymore. You know, you were just a mom. So I totally relate there.
Yeah. So, and we go back to work really quick in the United States, you know? So it's a lot on your plate.
So real quick, Tia, tell us what your upbringing was like, because I'm always curious of people's backstories of how they got to where they are. You talked about some of it being genetic. You talked about some of it even being raised by somebody who's a pretty happy-go-lucky guy. What was your upbringing like up in Canada?
Yes. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere. So picture halfway between Seattle and Alaska. And the closest town was a 45-minute drive. My parents ran a tiny little local ski area, and we lived in a little log cabin. We didn't have a TV or a telephone in this log cabin until I think I was five. I have two younger sisters, and basically we would ski, and you know, it was a pretty simple life, I will say, from a childhood perspective. And we would spend summers in southern British Columbia, sort of close to Vancouver, with my dad's family. My dad's Canadian, my mom is American. And so the first 10 years, really good sort of happy memories. My parents went through a very difficult separation and divorce. And I remember one day they called a family meeting and sat my sisters and I down and said, you know, dad's going to stay living in the house. As we had moved to southern British Columbia at this point, mom is going to move out. And I told you about my happy-go-lucky dad. At this point, my dad was really, really unhappy. So I saw his light dwindling. And it was sort of years of him becoming less and less happy, which was scary, obviously, as a young adolescent to see. And one day, actually, I woke up in the morning, I could hear music playing and I could smell pancakes. I walked downstairs and there was just something different about him. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he was making breakfast, et cetera. And, I remember saying, you know, good morning, dad, are you happy because it's your birthday? And he turned to me and said, Tia, I have had three of the worst years of my entire life. And I woke up this morning and I said to myself, I'm not going to have another bad year.
Mm.
And from that day, I saw him choose to be happy and make decisions to make himself happier. And I can't think of a better lesson to learn as a 12-year-old than you can actually choose to be happy. And then I grew up through, you know, teenage years, grew up in this city called Kelowna, British Columbia. I would spend time at my mom and dad's house. And when I was 18, moved out to a different city in Canada, Calgary. I was sort of partying and waitressing. And then when I realized, okay, I don't want to be a waitress forever because I always loved school, I was going to university in Calgary. And then I transferred to the University of Hawaii in Honolulu, moved to Honolulu by myself when I was 20 years old and studied tourism and hospitality and got a business degree there. And then started a successful sales and marketing career in the hotel industry.
Wow. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's
what an inspiration your dad is. Like,
no kidding.
He really like was kind of that pivotal moment that ended up creating what you have now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I will say my mom has given me similar lessons along the way as the ups and downs of her life. But yeah, absolutely. I think that when I've had really challenging seasons, which we all have in business and parenting and marriage and life, that know that you're never, ever stuck. Nothing stays the same, and that you are the driver of your own life, even though sometimes it doesn't feel like it.
Right.
You are.
Yeah. That's a fantastic message. I think we need to get out there in the world more and more. And I do think that is happening because of work like you and work like you're doing in your book and things like that. So we want to dive into that in a minute. I have a question for you. One of the quotes you told us is you cannot have success without having failure. You've talked about a few of the little things along the way. Mm-hmm. What was some adversity that you went through in your career? Because I'm assuming that getting to where you are today, owning a business, your husband owns his own business, you're now a published author, you're doing speaking, public speaking to bring happiness to the world. I'm guessing that even like during your adult life from like 18 on, it wasn't always the case for you.
No. Yeah. Right off the bat, I can think of a very challenging time when I was 26 years old and I say I got like pushed into a leadership role. So I'd only been out of university a few years and I became a director of sales and marketing at the Sheraton Kauai Resort on the south shore of the beautiful island of Kauai. And I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I had a team, I think I had 9 direct reports. I had never really led other people before in this kind of professional capacity. And I made, I want to say hundreds of mistakes. And I didn't get fired. I actually kept the job and got promoted and, you know, ended up, you know, doing okay. But in the book and when I think back, first of all, I, you know, worked nonstop. Okay. I was in my 20s, you know, you don't have that much going on at that point, no kids or husband or anything, but, was working nonstop and, was trying to lead and trying to motivate and inspire and, you know, drive results. And so one example of a mistake that I made is because I was in such uncharted territory for work in my life, I was copying the general manager of the hotel. So the way that she, who was my boss, the way that she was leading, the way that she would talk in meetings, the way that she was acting and leading, I sort of thought at, you know, this young age, like, all right, that's, I guess that's what you do. And so I wasn't even acting like myself. I was acting like this woman, Angela Bento. And people said, Tia, you are actually just talking like, I mean, to think about that, to not act like yourself. Right. And I was like, oh, it was, yeah. It was a kind of unconscious actually. So that was definitely a stumble. In terms of, and I could say many different things along the way. I'll share one other quick stumble, not an entrepreneur, but being in business. I was the director of marketing and PR for the W Istanbul Hotel in Turkey. And, new to Turkey, I was learning the Turkish language and everything I knew about business up until this point was from the United States. And I didn't realize how much of my business perspective was cultural. I thought this is how you do business, but really it's how you do business in the United States. And so here I am coming to Istanbul. The global hotel company was one that I'd been working with. So I felt very comfortable with the company because I'd been there for years, but was now in Istanbul. And when I was meeting with, you know, brand partners or even media, I stumbled a lot because I had a lot of assumptions. I had a lot of assumption. People pulled me aside and said, that's not how it's done here. That is actually really, you should never do that again.
Wow.
So there's many more, but those are a few.
That had to be a culture shock.
Yes.
Turkey.
Yeah. Wow. I always think of, who was it? It was one of the presidents that went over to another country and was giving the V for victory. And apparently there it was like flipping them the bird. Like, you got to know the culture you're in.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. So I want to dive into the leadership aspect, because that's really what we're here to talk about today, is helping people be better leaders. And you know, I didn't even include the word happy in there, if you noticed, just helping people be better leaders. Right. Because if we're happy, I mean, I'm a leader in my organization. I never used to see myself that way, but obviously I am that at this point with 40 employees. And so it's you can be a leader without being a happy leader. And I find it interesting that you have this, what you call a methodology. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that methodology came first and then the book came later. Correct me if I'm wrong, but tell me about this be a happy leader methodology that you created.
Yes. So I have what I call it's the happiness imperative. I truly believe that it is the responsibility of the leader to prioritize their own happiness and well-being and create a positive culture in their organization. And you're right. I had this methodology and then wrote the book. And this methodology came from my successful experience of leading sales teams. And we were, successful sales teams in the hotel industry. So there are steps in the methodology specifically for the leader. So for example, step one is start with you. And I inspire and teach leaders, this is how you take care of yourself and make sure that for the majority of the time, you have a positive, optimistic mindset. Not every single day, that's not possible. But first of all, you need to start with you. And then there are other steps on how you interact with your team and also how you how you can be efficient and execute. I have one step that's called execute brilliantly, because I believe that happy leaders are not working 80 to 100 hours a week. You have time to spend with your kids, with your spouse. You can go on dates, you sleep, et cetera. And so as I left the hotel industry in 2019, and I was getting, on my annual reviews, I was getting 99 out of 100 from the hotel owners. Hotel owners were doubling my bonuses, saying, you did so good, we're just going to like double your annual bonus. So I thought, okay, I want to take this and put it into these 8 steps that are very easy to, I believe, very easy to follow, so that, people can take them one at a time. Mm-hmm. And I know it's proven because it's exactly what I did. So hopefully that answers your question.
That's interesting. So there's 8 steps. Can you real quickly run them off for us? I know we don't have time to dive into every one.
Yes. So the first one,
I'm curious. Until I get your book, I got to know. Sorry.
I know. I got to say. Yes. So the first step is start with you. Okay. Step 2 is zoom out your perspective. Step 3, execute brilliantly so that you don't have to work all the time. Step 4, prioritize relationships over to-do lists. So this is how you interact with all of your direct reports. Step 5 is your number one priority. And your number one priority is your team. Step 6 is measure to excel. So this is all about measuring the lead measures that really drive results and not focusing as much on the lag measures, on the lead measures. And I reference the 4 disciplines of execution. Step 7 is be the spark. So this is about bringing a inspirational and positive energy to others, because energy is contagious. And I'll go on. And then step eight is master your mindset. So having a mindset of innovation, happiness, and creativity are 100% connected. And it's also about, always thinking about how you can grow and improve as a human being, kind of what we were talking about before, and having a having a bias to say yes before you shut things down. Look at, you know, what if, what would it look like if we tried that?
I love that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, wow. So something that jumped out at me, and I hope this doesn't come across as a challenge. It's more a curiosity, because this is, I always say I'm like a 3-year-old in a 45-year-old's body. Which I definitely am. And at this point, I don't even really apologize for. So I'm curious. Number one, you said, and I'm not going to get the verbiage right, but you said number one is take care of yourself, basically. It immediately made me think of, we just literally got off a plane not even 12 hours ago. And it's the old, like, they do the thing with a mask, and, you know, they show the person, oh, you got to put your own mask on first before you can help your kids put their mask on, and that type of thing. That was the analogy that jumped out at me. So how do we balance that with the idea that a good leader is sacrificial? Like, where's the balance in that dichotomy? And I don't know if you have the answer. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Such a great question. I've never been asked that before, so I really appreciate the question. So I will say that a good leader, a great leader, really cares about their people and wants their people to be successful and grow and realize their potential, right? Their optimal potential.
Yeah.
And so if you are sacrificing your own well-being, you are actually stunting your team's growth, because you need to take care of yourself. And by doing so, you're inspiring them to take their care of their self. If you're not taking care of yourself, let's say you are sleep deprived, maybe not eating well, not getting enough, you know, exercise, not taking time to, you know, get away from technology and all these different things, you might show up to your team stressed, anxious, you could be overwhelmed, etc. And you transfer those feelings, you transfer those behaviors and those thoughts to your team. And not only does that affect your team, it affects your team's families. There's research that shows that leadership connects to spouses and children as well. And so I've never actually thought of leader as being sacrificial. Of course, I think, you know, and I look at my years of leadership, you go above it. You do things for your team. You might, you know, say, okay, I'll do that at night because I'm going to help my team today do this. You know, I think part of it is, I see it more as, you know, supportive and sort of being there. I want to say as a coach, I think of like a sports coach that you're there. But with working with leaders directly, I wouldn't want them to sacrifice their, you know, whether it's their emotional well-being, their physical well-being, their relationships, et cetera, for their team, because it actually is going to negatively impact their team.
Yeah. So it's counterproductive. It's not selfish.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, we're in a time right now, and Carla, feel free to jump in, because if you don't, I'll just keep talking. So we're in a time right now where staffing is, like, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, at an all-time difficulty. Not that staffing in any organization or business hasn't always been a challenge and an art, because
it's always hard to find good employees. Yeah. Right now, it's hard to find any employees.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a true statement. So, you know, the thing I like to tell people is, look, we don't have a whole lot of control as a leader of the outside world and things that happen in government and economies and viruses and different things that, you know, supply chains. And we don't have a whole lot of control over that. In fact, we probably have almost zero control over that if we're honest with ourselves. But what we do have control over is our team. And mm-hmm. bringing this back to, like, this be a happy leader methodology that you have, like, what can leaders do to prevent that turnover? I always say, like, the key to business is finding good people and then retaining them. You know, mm-hmm. retaining them isn't important if you can't find them. But right. let's assume that we have good people on our team and we're trying to just maintain and keep them happy. At least we're not going backwards if we're not adding to our staff. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the main reason why companies bring me in, is because they want to focus on retention and then of course attracting, you know, retaining and attracting great talent so that their businesses grow. So the first thing I want to say, because everybody, this always comes up, is, you know, money and perks and all of that. So what the research shows is that leaders, you need to at least be paying at market level. So for example, in the laundromat industry, and you have different competitors, if you're paying below the market compared to what competitors, you're going to have a very difficult time keeping your staff. So, you know, and if everyone in, you know, the city is giving a big holiday party and everyone gets gift, you should probably do that too. If they all know, so think about money and perks. You need to be at market level. You don't have to be way above, but you need to be at market level. Okay.
Okay.
After that, it's nothing to do with expense or, you know, extra bonuses or, you know, big titles or anything like that. So I want, for people to think about two pillars. Pillar number one is results. Pillar number two is relationships. And I'll give three different strategies and tactics under each one that leaders can do right now that is proven to increase the happiness and morale of their team members every single day. And you want people to feel happy while they're working. They'll take better care of their customers. They'll be more productive, more engaged, help, you know, work better as a team. There's so many benefits of people when they're happy and they're working. So under results, the very first thing is consistently giving people specific, authentic, positive feedback. So this seems like, yeah, we know this. Everyone knows it. It's common sense, but it's not common practice. So I say to every leader listening, are you, if you look at all of your team, is everyone getting consistent feedback on a regular basis? That's, and you need to coach for improvement. Of course, you can't let people do incorrect things in your company, but that you boost, you know, they get motivation. So that's number one.
And authentic. I think that's the huge thing. Authentic. Not just good not job. Like, what did no. I do?
Good job is like, yeah, exactly. So like you did that with that customer. That customer then this. Thank you so much. That is going to, and again, all of this is free, but you have to, leaders are busy. So you think, oh, I don't have time to do this. No, do this. Do this to everyone. And you know, the return, the ROI will be worth it. So also under results is communication on how the business is doing. So everyone in the company, whether it be a part-time employee to, senior leadership, everyone wants to know how the company is doing. So I use the example of a steward who washes dishes in a hotel, comes to work every single day for 9 hours and is washing huge dishes, like dishes from banquets. They want to know, is the hotel doing well? Are we making money? Are our customers happy? So a lot of times that information is kept within the executive team or maybe just management. But I would say on a monthly basis, be communicating, you know, the results. And then the third is leaders need to communicate why the organization and why their work matters. The Harvard research has shown that the number one motivator for human beings is progress in meaningful work. Human beings want to know that their work is meaningful and they want to see progress in it. So with my clients, with leadership groups, I say, how is your company helping society? Not helping your customers because your customers give you money, not helping your investors because, you know, those are your stakeholders, but how does your laundromat make your community better? How does it help society? And when, you know, leaders sit down and think about that, and what I teach leaders is I say, talk about this all the time. And then talk about the progress that the organization is making, how you're growing, how you're serving the community, and how everyone's work matters. Okay. So those are three things under results. For relationships on how to retain people and have them be happy. So the first is create a culture of belonging. You want people to feel like they belong at your company, not because they're the assistant manager, not because they're this, they belong because they're Carla. And Carla, you know each other as a human being. There's a lot of ways to create belonging. But taking the time to really get to know people and to build relationships and to foster friendships, et cetera, will pay dividends. So create a culture of belonging. The second one is team building. So this is personal. You have to know what your team wants, but those, whether it's a little happy hour, whether everyone goes and does something charity work together, whether it's a book club, whether it's everyone taking an online course together because they want to learn about growing a business. It doesn't matter. It's doing things together where you're not talking about the business. You're talking just to your team members. One of the number one reasons why people don't leave is because they have friendships. I remember that when I was working in a hotel in Los Angeles, one of my account directors came to me and said, Four Seasons just called. They offered me $25,000 more. And I was like, all right, ready for that. Shoot, I'm going to lose this person because I can't pay him 25K more. And this woman, Amy, said to me, but I'm not going to go because I don't want to leave Megan. Megan was her best friend in the hotel. So I was like, thank you, Megan. Great. She's not leaving. So creating friendships, think about it like a family's where it's like, yeah, I could get more money, but what if everyone over there aren't my people? Right. So that's another. And then also with relationships is talking to people about where they want to go with their life. So I talk about this in sort of the one-on-one coaching. Another example is, sitting down with people and talking to them about their dreams, about their vision. What do you want to do? You're part-time. Do you want to move to full-time? Every single person will be motivated and inspired with someone sitting down on a regular basis. It's once a month, once a quarter on what you can do. And talking to them about their personal vision and their professional vision and showing authentic interest in their future. So those are six. I have many more, but I hope those are helpful.
Yeah, I love that. A couple challenges I think that are more specific to really small companies like ours and even in the laundromat industry. I know for us, it has been a challenge to help develop those relationships because a lot of our laundromats, so they're attended, but only one person is there. So there's a lot of working independently. And I know that makes it a lot harder to foster relationships between the employees and everything. One thing that we did start doing is having like an overlapping hour where, one person stayed for an hour longer and the other person an hour earlier. So they at least worked together for like that hour just to kind of give continuity to what was going on into the store, but also to help foster those relationships. Do you have any other advice for what if your employees don't work together?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, so many teams are, there's also lots of teams and companies that are virtual or hybrid and a lot working independently. So yes, I think that example of having that crossover hour so that they do get some connection is great. In this case, I would look at what are the different tools and resources that the owner of the business or the manager can use to have people stay connected. So one thing that comes to mind is could everyone be on a WhatsApp group chat, for example, and use that for communication if everyone has phones? Or could you do video communication over if everyone has an email address, could you send a video? Maybe it needs to be in a couple different languages if you have different cultures working as well to communicate. Could you also do like, again, it depends on if it's once a month, once a quarter. Could you have a, once a quarter, maybe around a holiday, a potluck or a, something in the morning.
Happy hour, coffee, something.
Coffee and donuts. Exactly. So I would say, look how you can use the phone, computer, and internet, like technology as well. And then a few times a year, have people either come together in person or, help people get, if you do it virtually, using Zoom and things like that. And I also say another way to connect is using good old snail mail. A leader could, let's say you have 40 people and actually put something in the mail, do a handwritten note and send. That is going to be extremely connecting and it'll take that leader maybe an hour to write notes. So those are some that comes to mind. And also maybe create buddy or small groups, everyone that works nights or everyone that wear this and have them, you know, connect that way too.
Or maybe even some type of like mentorship program. Maybe
that's another
employees good. Have kind of a person they're assigned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just kind of thinking. Another thing that I thought of as you were going through, one of the results ones was share how the business is doing. And just thinking, so kind of thinking from the perspective of laundromat or small business owners, I think they're hesitant to say, one, what if the company's not doing well? Is that going to decrease happiness if like you're working really hard, but guess what? We're sucking.
We're struggling.
And then the other side of that, if you are doing really well, is there a fear of, well, if I tell them we're doing really well, then everybody's going to want raises. Maybe we're doing well, but we can't afford raises. So what would you say to one, what if it's bad news? And then my other question is the whole, will that just make them ask for raises?
Yes. So assuming that you're paying market level and that you're not underpaying people, and you know that this is fair, equitable in terms of benefits and pay, et cetera. So on the first part, if the company is not doing well, I would absolutely say to still, and you can choose which KPIs, and you know, if you share, you know, revenue, it depends if you want to share profit, if you want to share market share information, this is how much. There's several different KPIs that you could talk about, right? How many new customers, et cetera. But know that this is a huge motivator for people. So if there's, you know, a quarter, a year, and of course, people are not blind to what's happening in the economy, what's happening in the world, and saying, you know, we're struggling, this industry is being challenged, our company's being challenged. And what I would say is share that. Because I've worked in many different types of hotels where, you know, we're not meeting budget, not doing well, share that information and share, here are our strategies, here is our plan to move in the right direction. And this is your part of it. So you can choose exactly what to share and how you want to share it, but you can still, without being Pollyanna.
She's been pestering folks all over town with this sunshine and happiness thing. Hearts and flowers, enough to make you sick.
Hush up. I want to hear it.
You know, of course, it's, you know, some humans are going to always ask for money, more money. I would say that shouldn't be a reason to stop. If you feel like you're paying fairly, then you absolutely should be communicating that the company's doing well and celebrating. You know, let's say you have a budget for the laundromat for the month of November and it's this, and you beat it by 10%. I would absolutely be saying, You did phenomenal. We took care of our customers. They're referring people. We are doing great, you know, and maybe at the end of that month, you give everyone a $50 Starbucks card and say like, thank you. You don't need to give, again, if you're underpaying, you're going to be in trouble. But if you're paying at market, you can show appreciation, and it doesn't even have to be monetary. It could be, I don't know, you're bringing in like muffins and coffee and just say, thank you. But so, the answer is, short answer, yes, communicate no matter how the business is doing. People really want to know, and it makes them more connected and it makes them more motivated.
Gives them ownership, buy-in, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always been a big believer in an organization of encouraging what I call ownership, not literally, of course, but ownership of your store. If you're a store manager, you're empowered to do whatever you want to do within the parameters of our non-negotiables as a company. And I found that creates a lot of buy-in. Things like just the, this is going to sound ridiculous, the silliest things like telling the manager, you could decorate for Halloween any way you want. Here's $150. Do whatever you want with it. If you want to spend it all on candy and give it away, have at it. If you want to buy all decorations, have at it. And they run with that. Like they love that stuff. And I love that they love it, but I also love that it brings a little joy and character to kind of your business. Otherwise, you're just always like that same old laundromat all the time.
Right. You made me think of another key point under results is people are happier when they're working, when they have autonomy. You know, the way to crush happiness at work is to micromanage people. People want to feel that their boss thinks they're a competent human being, right? If you think of someone treats you and you feel like they're incompetent, you know, it squashes your happiness while working. So yeah, that's a perfect example of,
yeah,
we trust you, you can do this. I'm not going to tell you exactly what to do. You're an adult.
Yeah. Or as I tell my employees regularly, I say, look, I would love to empower you and give you all the power in the world to make every decision. And all you have to do is make good decisions. If you're doing what I want you to do, which is ultimately just serving the customer, that's mm-hmm. really all we care about. Mm-hmm. If you're taking care of our customers, taking care of your fellow employees, we're going to be happy. And right. And you would, when I have that conversation in a very literal sense like that with either an entry-level employee or even a manager or upper-level management, every single time you can see their face light up. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, in our industry, most of our employees, even managers, have usually been, you know, shift managers at fast food restaurants, and they're still, you know, they're certainly not high level executives. And so most of them in their life have never been trusted to that level. So to not, that all they know is micromanagement. And when you empower them in that way, it's powerful, powerful stuff. So mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. I've had those experiences in my small business, and they absolutely work. This is not theory. This is not fluff. This stuff absolutely works in our business. And for everybody listening out there, this is, you know, people reach out to us all the time because in the laundromat business, to have built a team of 40 people with general managers and store managers and layers of management and assistant general managers and trainers and store attendants and delivery drivers and all these different components, people ask me all the time, how have you built the team you're built? Like, I can't even find anybody to just work a shift. How do you do that? And I'm going to answer it because that's a big question I get all the time. The answer mm-hmm. is what I just said, guys. It's just what Tio was just talking about. And I suspect, because I want to get into your book real quick before we run out of time. And I suspect in your book that permeates your book. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes. Yes. No, absolutely. You know, build a relationship with them as a human, guide them, and then trust them and set them free. I can't help but think of it, you know, it aligns with parenting too, right? Mm. It's like you want them to soar on their own, mm-hmm. and you're there because, you know, in your guys' case, you're running a successful business, you have more experience, you know, maybe there's people in your company that one day are going to have a successful business too. And so, yeah, as anything you can do to help them be successful, will make you successful. And if you want your customers to be happy, take care of your people. Take care of your people. They'll take care of your customers.
No doubt about it.
Definitely.
No doubt whatsoever. All right. So in your book, the first question I have is, so you have this methodology. You've been successful with it for a year. You've been coaching, speaking, you know, in a leadership role in many different organizations. Why the book? Like, why did you write the book? And then tell us about the book before we go, because I can't wait to read it. It's in pre-order right now. You guys should go to our website and order it, or go on Amazon and order the book for sure. And I think you said that it'll be delivered in January. Is that correct?
Yes. Could become a little sooner, but it hits bookstores January 18th.
Awesome.
So I've always enjoyed writing. If I look back at school, English was one of my favorite subjects. And in my career of working in Hawaii, New York City, I was in Turkey and Los Angeles, I, like most people, came across and had the pleasure of having amazing mentors and leaders and, you know, business owners, et cetera. And I experienced and saw the opposite: people who were toxic, people who were negative, people who sucked the life out of teams and who negatively affected results. And I saw a lot of people, like my peers, also struggling in a lot of ways. And so, as I started speaking and working with companies, I'm very aware I'm not going to hit all 7 billion people on earth. Right. I was like, all right, I can only be in so many places, mm-hmm. you know, but there's a better way. A lot of people are struggling and there's an easier way. And so that's really the reason I wrote it, is I hope that I can help as many people as possible in different places around the world who are either feeling overwhelmed, who are not feeling happy, who feel like they're working all the time and they're not achieving the business results, and they're leading a team, whether it's a team of two or a team of, you know, 2,000. And I was at a conference in San Diego, and I sat next to a woman who said, you know, what do you do? What do you do? And she said, I help authors write their books in 90 days. And I said, whoa, give me your business card. So I actually hired her and I wrote the whole book in 90 days. So wow. It was a really enjoyable process. And I hope to write a lot more.
Wow, fantastic. Can you give us a real quick oversight of the book? I know we've been talking about your methodology, but yeah. if somebody buys the book and they open it in chapter one and read it through to the other end of the cover, what are they going to get in the book?
So in the book, they're going to get the experience of me walking shoulder to shoulder with them as a real authentic human being. The book is full of stories of personal and professional challenges, of failures and successes. And it's motivational in the fact that I'm right next to the reader saying, I did this, you can do it too. Keep going, keep trying. So that's part of it, is it's not full biography, but there definitely is a lot of personal stories. So everyone that reads it is going to really feel connected to this other human being that's walking through leadership and business with them. And then they are going to get by the steps and the actions that I took. You know, I told you about that story of 26-year-old Tia at the Sheraton Kauai had no idea what I was doing. Fast forward to 38-year-old Tia running a team in Los Angeles and, you know, blowing results out of the water, getting, you know, and only working from 8:30 to 5 because I had two little kids. I couldn't work nonstop. So that's really what those 8 steps is. This is exactly what I did and it worked. And if you do this, I know it will work for you too.
I know this sounds really basic, but it's not. The best way to learn from people, or the best way to learn, is to learn from people who have been there and done that. Because even people that write books like me and Tia, the reality is we're just people. You mentioned it several times, your authenticity or transparency and all those things that come into being a business owner, building a business, writing a book, inspiring and teaching others. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know this, Tia, but there's a lot of people out there that are teaching people how to do things that they've never actually done themselves. Mm-hmm. And that seems a little crazy to me. Because I always say, I mean, they're just talking in theory. Like what?
Right. There's someone else's information in there. You're right. Right. They've never walked the walk.
Yeah. But the best and most authentic teachers in the world are people that have been there and done it. And I always add the caveat, because that's kind of cliche. I always add the caveat that are actively still doing it. Mm. Like nothing wrong with being retired and being a coach on the side or writing a book or a consultant or what. Never, nothing wrong with that. But I always say every year that you're not actively doing it, the world is changing. Society is changing. And so I've always felt the best teachers are people that are actively doing what they teach every day versus just theory. These are just my opinions. Do you have any thoughts on that before we close out?
No, I absolutely agree. I think that as a student, when you're learning from someone, when they have the stories and you know, to your point that, oh, they walked that walk, it's a lot stronger of a message. It's, you feel more connected, and coming back to trust, I think you trust that teacher more because their examples are, it's not theory. It's real. It's their reality. Well,
they can relate to what you're going through.
Yes.
One last quick question. So someone who is watching this podcast, who is feeling down in the dumps.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them today? Where should they start? What's the first thing they can do to change their position?
First thing is accept that you are a human being and that all human beings feel like they're down in the dumps at times. Life is peaks and valleys, and to not be upset or angry at yourself or disappointed in yourself that you are feeling that way. So I would say just acceptance that you're a human being. I would say then to connect and get clear on exactly what you're going through. So the research shows the more emotional granularity, the more words that we have to our different feelings, the happier and more well we are. So, you know, connect with, Are you feeling really frustrated? Are you feeling guilty? Are you feeling really disappointed? Are you angry? Are you, and we probably feel, you know, all that, it could be all of it at once and so on. So, you know, whether you talk to someone about that or whether you write it down of what exactly am I feeling? And just understand, of course, because our emotions connect to our behaviors and thoughts. And then the third thing, because I know I won't go on, but the third thing I will say is use your physical body to jumpstart your mindset. So in Western culture, we have a dualistic mindset. For example, if you have a bad back, you might go to a chiropractor, go take pain, back pain medication, et cetera. And maybe if you're feeling depressed, you might go talk to a therapist. To right, mind, body.
Yes.
Our mind and body are 100% connected every single second of the day. There is no separation ever. And there's a great book called Healing Back Pain that talks about healing back pain with your mind as an example. So use your body. So you're feeling down in the dumps. I would say go outside and go for a walk or a hike, go move, eat nutritious food, make sure you're sleeping at least 7 hours. And, you know, take time for meditation or just sitting still. And even a very simple act of, because when you're down, the way you sit, the way you, you know, is act as if you are feeling confident, as if you are feeling, you know, with your body, and your body is talking to your mind. So I would, that's the third, and I could probably give you 12 more, but I won't, but that's, those are the first things I would say to do is accept, talk or write about what you're actually going through, and then use your body to help fake it till you make it
kind of thing.
Exactly. And get the, yeah. And I would say, you know, when you eat good food, when you have enough sleep, when you exercise, it produces happiness chemicals in your brain. So you're going to start feeling better.
Yeah. All right.
And since this whole episode is all about leadership, I assume that we can take those same things and transfer them over to helping a team member get out of their funk. Or we don't have to be an expert. We don't have to be Tia Graham writing a book about this to look at somebody that's having a problem going through a divorce or just having a bad day or whatever. And we can encourage them in the same way without having to be an expert per se. That's just my opinion on this.
Absolutely.
So we can use them for ourselves, but we can also use them to help others. Yeah, and then send them to his book.
Yeah. Dave, I get asked that all the time by executives and leaders. They say, you know, if you see someone's really negative all the time and they're, you know, I say they're going through something. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't just want to be negative and have all their team members, you know. So as a leader, sit down and exact same thing. Hey, I see you're a little down. What's going on? Anything you want to talk about? You want to go for a walk? And and be there as their support, of course.
Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. We appreciate you taking the time to dive into this with us. Obviously, I personally know what it takes to write a book. We're in very similar places. A lot of work. And I did not write mine in 90 days. I wrote about it 7 years, just so you know.
rewrote.
Maybe I need that business card. No, good. But anyway, listen, before we let you go today, how can people reach out to you? How can they connect with you? Where are the places you're most frequently at, whether it's virtually, online, or email, or your website, or whatever? And then obviously, how can they get their book or get your book? I'm a big, big fan of book. I estimate that I've read thousands of books in my life, even though I'm not a very, what I call, formally educated person. And I cannot tell you how much I've learned from reading sometimes the same books over and over again. So I'm a big proponent of reading books, and I can't wait to get your book myself. But how can people reach you?
Thank you. I feel the same way about books. My dream's to have a library one day, just put them all around me. So the book, you can go to happyleaderbook.com, and there are three bonuses. There's an online course, a mini course, a leadership workbook, and a leadership resource kit that all comes together. When you pre-order the book now, you can grab it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the online retailers. I am really active on LinkedIn. So Tia Graham on LinkedIn, and also Instagram, Arrive at Happy on Instagram. My website is arriveathappy.com. And I also have a YouTube channel. I put out a new video for professionals every Friday. So Tia Graham, Arrive at Happy on YouTube.
Awesome. And I'll put all those links in the show notes as well.
We'll link all those as well. Mm-hmm. Listen, we know that you're busy, and Tia, we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to make this interview happen. I know you wrote your book so that you can bring value to others that you might not be able to personally connect to face to face. And so Carla and I do these shows. We see it as our obligation to take your message to maybe a small audience, but an audience nonetheless. So we're going to do our part to get your message out to the world as well. So we thank you for taking the time and joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you for all the work you do to support business owners and teams. I know it's not always easy leading a team and running a business. So yeah, thank you guys for providing resources and inspiration to people.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, guys, this is Dave Menz, Laundromat Millionaire in Cincinnati, Ohio, with my beautiful wife and the awesome Tia Graham. Guys, make it a happy day, and we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.